And you're listening to WHCC in Holland. It's time now for Talk of the Town, the program in which you, the listeners, participate with your telephone calls. Our Talk of the Town number is 395-1450. Our guest this morning is attorney Nathan Box. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning, Juke.
And should we be looking at anything different for the end of the year?
You know, I always like to counsel clients to try to get things wrapped up for the year, end of the year. Make sure that they've got their ducks in a row. I like them to have their ducks in a row all year round. And there are obviously some tax things that need to be done. And I'm by no means a tax expert and by no means a financial planning expert, but there are things that people are doing at the end of the year to get those types of matters wrapped up. And part and parcel of that is making sure your estate planning obviously is in mm-hmm. good shape for the end of the year. And I have a lot of clients who are snowbirds. I have people who have who are heading out to Florida and Arizona and other nice warm places for the wintertime and like to get things wrapped up and set before they go, make sure that they've got all of their documents in order just in case something happens while they're gone. And so we do a lot of checkup kinds of things mm-hmm. at the end of the year. And so I'm starting to get more and more of those calls in. I tend to get the frantic phone calls of we're leaving at the end of next week. Can we get things taken care of between now and then? And I don't like doing it that way. If we don't have to, I like to be able to take some time and think through things. But I'm also smart enough to know, and I've been doing this long enough to know that I'm going to get those calls. And so I tend to block off some time each week to be able to make sure I can take those emergency situations that come in. Because I don't want to leave somebody in the lurch. I don't want to say to them, I'm sorry, you know, I can't help you. I'll see you, you know, next spring when you come back in town and then have something happen to them. So we do like to do some kind of final brush up things. The other thing that I see a lot this time of year are people that are finally making good on New Year's resolutions that they said back in January. You know what? This is the year I'm going to get my paperwork done. This is the year I'm going to get that trust done or that will done or that power of attorney taken care of. And lo and behold, it gets to be November, December, and they start looking back on the year and they go, you know, we said we were going to do that thing and we never really got around to it. And so we like to get those things done before the end of the year. And with school vacations, you know, a lot of people take time off between Christmas and New Year's. I tend to see a lot of teachers during that time period. They've got a couple of weeks off usually. And so we take care of those things. Is there anything that you absolutely have to do in terms of estate planning before the end of the year to be able to be any better than you would if you did it in January? No, in most cases, no. You know, it's generally not a calendar issue. It's generally more of a life, things happen in your life issue.
Yeah.
And so, but we like to be able to be ready. We, as estate planners, are planners. I am a problem prevention attorney rather than a problem resolution attorney in most cases. I don't go to court. I don't do litigation work. I don't, if two people are fighting with one another, I'm not usually the person who's in the boxing ring for them. I'm usually out there way before any of those problems have occurred and trying to prevent those problems from happening in the first place. And so the farther ahead we can be on that, the better off we generally are.
Right, right.
The one place that I probably spend more time on resolution than anywhere else is when it comes to Medicaid and nursing home care planning. You know, we try to plan as much as we can for that, but there are oftentimes a lot of things that we can't do or don't make sense to do until someone is actually in a nursing home or going into care and going to be looking at the possibility of Medicaid. Because a lot of the things that we do in that regard are irrevocable. They cannot be changed. And you don't want to do them too soon because, frankly, we don't know if someone is ever going to be in a nursing home. We don't know necessarily when they're going to be in a nursing home. And we don't know what their financial situation is going to be at the time that they go in. So but if that's an area where you can actually plan too far ahead, if you're not careful. I have circumstances where I have a husband and wife, and husband may have Alzheimer's or dementia and is spiraling downward, and we're looking at the possibility of them having to head to a nursing home. And the family says, okay, let's kick this into gear. Let's get things set for Dad to be able to go into the nursing home so we can get that as much in place as we possibly can. So when it's time for him to go, we can file that application and be all set. And I sometimes have to put the brakes on them and say, you know, you don't want to do that yet because Dad's not in the nursing home yet.
Yeah.
And Medicaid won't take an application until somebody's been in for 30 days continuously anyway. So that usually gives us a month to be able to plan. Plus, those applications are taken in on a month-by-month basis. So I can file an application at anywhere from the 1st of November to the 30th of November and get a client qualified for the entire month of November. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter. They don't prorate it by day. They do it by month. And so that oftentimes will give us, you know, if I've got a client who's going into the nursing home today, I know I have until the end of December to be able to get that application put together for them. So that gives us a little bit of leeway. And the problem with applying or the problem with setting things in motion too quickly is, you know, say the husband has Alzheimer's dementia. We do the planning based on him. And so we start funneling assets into irrevocable trusts that are for the benefit of the wife. We make sure we get assets transferred over into the wife's name and out of the husband's name so that by the time we're able to file that application for the husband, husband has less than the $2,000 that he needs in order to qualify. And we do all of that ahead of time, and then wife has a stroke. Mm. And wife ends up in the nursing home before husband does. Now we've funneled all of these assets over to the benefit of the wife. Nothing for the husband. Husband levels off, doesn't need to go into the nursing home at all anymore, but he doesn't have any assets. We've moved everything over onto the wife's side, and now it's all exposed.
Yeah.
And that's a problem with doing it too soon. And I've had clients say to me, no, we're sure dad's going in before mom. We're absolutely sure. And I say, you can't ever be sure. And I've had it happen on multiple occasions that we thought dad was going to go in first, and lo and behold, mom ends up in before dad does. And the family is very thankful at that point that we did wait until we actually needed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real benefit to families. And it can cost or it can be hundreds of thousands of dollars one way or the other, depending on what it is that you do.
Right. We're going to take time out here for a word. We'll be right back with the attorney. And if you have a question,
worship services from Hope Church at 11 a.m. Enjoy programs of faith Sunday mornings on WHTC.com and 1450 WHTC, Holland's hometown station.
All right, we're here with the attorney this morning, and if you have a question, you may call us at 395-1450. Our line is open for you right now. And anything else you should be thinking of this time of the year?
It's, you know, this time of year, there are gifting things that people need to be concerned about. People are oftentimes looking at giving gifts to kids, giving gifts to charities. You want to make sure that you stay, one, under the IRS limits. And of course, now I'm having a senior moment and going, is it $13,000 now or is it $14,000? I think it's still $13,000 a year. They up it in $1,000 increments based on the rate of inflation. So before you give a $14,000 gift, make sure you double check that, because Nathan this morning is going 13 or 14. I'm trying to remember right off the top of my head. But the other thing that you need to be concerned about, and this ties back into the Medicaid and the nursing home care planning issue, is regardless of what the IRS limit is, Medicaid says you are not allowed to give anything away in the 5 years prior to applying for Medicaid.
Oh.
And people confuse those two things quite a bit. They'll say, well, no, that's all right. I'm giving within the IRS limits, so that's not a problem. And I say, well, yeah, those are two completely different sets of rules that apply, and you have to deal with the more strict of the rules. So if you think that there's any possibility that you may be applying for Medicaid within the next 5 years, you don't want to give anything away. Now, that being said, gifting is actually one of the tools that we can use to get somebody qualified for Medicaid, but it's done in a very deliberate way.
Okay, I've got a call here.
Sure.
Let's take that call. Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, my brother is watching over my mom's money and so on.
Okay.
And I think he's dipping his hand into the pot. Is there any way that I can have somebody else appointed to watch over her affairs?
Is mom still competent? Does mom have the ability to be able to make the decision herself? Hello, yes. Can you hear me? Oh, can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the line.
Did you hear my question?
I did. My question back to you is your mother still competent?
Hello?
Oh, I don't think he can hear me.
Can't hear your voice. Let's see what we did wrong here.
No. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear
you. All right. My question back to you is mom competent? Does mom have the ability to be able to make that change herself?
If she wanted to, I guess.
Okay. So if mom wants to, it's a relatively easy thing to do, and maybe the best way to approach that is to...
Well, I don't think she knows what's going on.
Well, that was exactly where I was headed, was maybe the first step is letting mom know, or having mom start looking into what's going on, to see whether that's the case. Because there are oftentimes where mom knows about it, mom doesn't have a problem with it, and if that's the case, there isn't much that you can do if mom's competent. Mom has the ability, if she's competent, to make bad decisions. But if mom's not aware of it, or mom doesn't want that to be happening, then the easiest thing to do is to have mom make that change. The only way you're really going to be able to get the change made if mom is competent and doesn't want to do it is to bring the court in and have the court make a decision, the probate court make a decision, that mom shouldn't be making these decisions on her own. And really the linchpin again on that is whether mom's competent to be able to make these decisions herself. So it may be a matter of there needs to be an intervention with the family where you sit down with mom and say, hey, we don't think that our brother is handling these finances well for you, and we'd like somebody else to be taking care of it for you. And the easiest way to do that is to kind of show her the numbers, show her what's been happening.
Yeah, except there's only her and my brother know what numbers are.
Well, and that's...
Well, I don't think she even knows what numbers are.
Well, and if she's competent, she has the right to know. So that may be the first step, is to say to her, Mom, do you realize what's going on? And we'd like to and maybe you can convince her to let you double check those numbers to be oversight on that. But again, if mom's competent, mom's the linchpin in this whole thing, that she has the ability to make the decisions on who she wants managing her affairs. And like I said, a competent person has the right to make bad decisions if they'd like to.
Ask our congressman. Yep. Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome.
All right. Got another call coming in here. Let's take that one. Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Yes, good morning. I have a real complex. This happened in 2004. But anyway, what happened is my two sons decided that I was incompetent. They went to a judge.
Okay.
And what happened is they put me in St. Mary's Hospital. Okay, I went to see a doctor. I won't even say his name because he thought I had dementia, Alzheimer's disease. Okay, they put me in the lockup situation, ran an MRI, and found I didn't have anything. They couldn't find anything wrong with me. Well, he put me on Selexa Seroquel. They put me in a nursing home for 4 months. They took everything away from me. And when I got out, I went, praise the Lord, to a doctor called Dr. Ariano, Dr. Mather, and they said, no, I just had a hormonal imbalance. In the meantime, my kids got all my money. They took everything and ran. What do I do? Is there anything I can still do?
There may be. The thing that you would want to do is one, try to gather as much information as you can about what they did with the money, what money was there at the time that they took over, and how the money was used during the time that they were taking care of that money. And you can, because they're, even though they have the authority to manage money for you, they still have an obligation to use that money for your benefit and not for their own. It's what we lawyers refer to as a fiduciary obligation. They are doing a job for you, and if they're not using the money for you, then they have some responsibility there to pay that money back.
Well, see, the sad thing of it is, when they did, they took it, spent it like crazy, okay, and they sold my house, sold my car, blah, 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 everything, okay? So we did go into court at one time, and he said all he had left was $50,000. Well, I knew that was a lie, because then as soon as he moved to Tennessee, he filed bankruptcy. So I don't know if my life savings was gone in a matter of 10 days.
Yeah, the best thing for you to do is to try to gather whatever information you can. It sounds like this may have already been dealt with the court, and so I'm not sure there's much more that can be done if the court's already made the determination on it. So it sounds like you've already gone through that process. But the best way to deal with this is to get whatever information you can on how you think that money was misused, and get that in front of a judge so that the judge can take a look at it and make that determination.
Okay, even after it's been, you know, like I said, 2004, it doesn't matter, because I was told before, too, that, you know, you only have 2 years to file.
Well, and that's, yeah, and that's going to be another issue, is that it's been so long, that you're right, it has been a long time. I was overlooking the fact that it had been back in 2004. But you're right. It's going to be, you're going to have a very difficult time because of the length of time that it's taken to do this. Now, if you had been, you know, in the hospital during that time period and hadn't had the ability to be able to address this issue, that can, stop that clock from running while you're in the hospital. So
okay, I'm sorry. Like I said, I was only in the hospital 10 days and then they put me in a nursing home.
Okay.
So,
yeah. It sounds like you may have exhausted all of your remedies on this already.
Like even a lawsuit with a doctor, there's no way I can.
Probably not anymore. No, nope, at this time frame, I think you may have waited too long.
Okay, thank you very much, sir.
You're very welcome.
Okay. Number here is 395-1450 if you have a question for the attorney this morning. On this beautiful morning.
It's absolutely beautiful morning. And there's a side issue from that last call, and that is, it sounds like she may have waited too long.
Yeah.
And there are what were referred to as statutes of limitations that say you have specific time limits to be able to go after someone that you think has done something wrong against you. And they're different for different types of things. And if people have watched television and seen ads for attorneys, that the attorney will say, you know, you only have a limited amount of time to be able to contact us on this issue. What they're talking about is, if it's an injury-based issue, if somebody has hurt you, you've got 3 years. If it's a contract-based issue, you generally have about 6 years to do that. If it is an action against an attorney for malpractice, you only have 2 years to do this. I always kind of chuckle when I think about that how did the attorneys get away with only 2 years on a statute of limitations? And I think that's because a lot of attorneys end up in the state legislature after that, after they're in practice. But the bigger lesson here is, don't wait. You know, and it did kind of slip past me that she said this all happened in 2004. That was 9 years ago.
9 years.
And the reason why they put time limits on these things is because information gets harder to find. People's memories start to fade. It's harder to get records on things that are that far ago. And so you really want to make sure if you think something has happened, you want to address it as quickly as you possibly can. Don't wait to take care of these things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's take a moment out here for the weather. And the weather is brought to you by the Farmhouse Restaurant. Delicious, thin, and crispy cracker crust pizzas. Doesn't that sound good today?
It does.
Yeah. Okay, the weather outlook is for partly cloudy today with a high of 44. And this evening it'll be windy with showers developing overnight, a low of 40. Tomorrow, windy with morning showers and a high of 54. And right now we are at 39 degrees here in the Tulip City.
And it's beautiful, absolutely beautiful
out
there.
Yes, it is.
I want to shift gears. I'll be happy to take whatever calls are out there, but I have another role that I play in this community as well as an attorney.
Why you have this tulip in your hand?
I am the chair of the Tulip Time Board this year, and we have been all smiles all week. Things have been going absolutely wonderfully. Tickets went on sale for all of the shows on Tuesday morning. We had a lineup in front of the Tulip Time office to purchase tickets, plus people can purchase tickets by telephone, and they can also purchase them online right directly through the tuliptime.com website. I'm not doing this as an advertisement. I'm doing this as a public service for all of those people who are listening, and I'm telling you, if you are interested in purchasing tickets for shows this year, buy them now.
Yes.
They are not... I know there's a press release that went out earlier today that you know, Bill Cosby is doing two shows, one in the afternoon, one in the evening. The afternoon show, after just a couple of days of ticket sales, is 50% sold. The evening show is 75% sold. And from what I've been told, other shows are selling out as well. And so we don't want people to be disappointed if they wait until they normally do in the spring to buy tickets. They're not going to be there.
Right. Okay, got a call. Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
Yeah. You were talking about not giving things away prior to 5 years.
Yes.
Does that include your church offering or birthday presents or...
That is a little bit of a gray area and a stickier wicket to deal with. The birthday present one is a little bit easier to deal with. You know, if you're giving your children or your grandchildren, you know, $25 or $50 on their birthday every year, and you can show a pattern that you've done that for years and years, that's likely to be able to get by the DHS. The Department of Health and Department of Human Services in Michigan, when they're looking at the application, they're likely to say, hey, if it's a continuing pattern, if you weren't, it doesn't look like you were doing this in anticipation of going into the nursing home and trying to divest yourself of your assets, you're probably going to be okay. But that one's a little harder. The one that's a little easier to deal with is the church one. And if you can show a regular pattern of giving to the church, they're not going to have any problem with that at all. And I actually had a client this week who were looking at putting together an application for them. They said, you know, our church does a Thanksgiving offering, and we often give a little more at Thanksgiving for that Thanksgiving offering than we do during the regular course of the week. And I said, you know what? Go ahead and do that. That should not be a problem. When the legislature was looking at this, they wanted to make sure that people were not that charitable giving was not squelched by this rule. Because all kinds of charities, all kinds of churches said, hey, if you start telling people that they can't give away anything in the 5 years prior to applying for Medicaid, they're going to stop giving to their church. They're going to stop giving to charities, and that's really going to hurt us. And so the legislature has loosened up a little bit in that area. Now, what I did say to this client is, if you normally give $100 in that Thanksgiving offering, and I can show that for the last 4 or 5 years you've given $100 at that Thanksgiving offering, and this year you give $5,000 to that Thanksgiving offering, that's going to be a difficult thing for me to be able to justify as a regular part of your giving process, because I can't have you giving $5,000 and then the next month applying for Medicaid. That's not going to work. So what I generally tell people is, live your lives. You know, if you normally give to church, give to church. If you normally give to charity, give to charity. If you normally give a nominal amount to your kids and your grandkids at Christmas and at birthdays, go ahead and do that. Do I want you to give, you know, $13,000 a year to each one of your kids every single year? No, I don't. Not if we think in the next 5 years that you're going to in a nursing home care. But if you normally give them $100, give them $100. Medicaid's not going to have a big problem with that. They're looking for the bigger numbers. They're looking for the things that look like you are divesting yourself of assets prior to going into the nursing home.
Okay, now if you happen to win the lotto.
Yes.
Or something like that.
Yes.
And you start giving your kids X amount of money, $1,000, you know, a year or whatever you're allowed to, it's $10,000, right?
It's, I believe, we were talking about that before. I should quick look it up on my phone here. It's either $13,000 or $14,000 this year. My brain isn't letting me decide which one it is.
Okay.
It's one of those two.
Every year you start giving that away.
That's a different story, because once you have passed a certain point of assets, and the general rule is between 500,000 and $1 million in assets, then you've got the ability to be able to give quite a bit of money away, pretty much whatever you want to give away, as long as you're retaining that much, because $500,000 will buy 5 years of nursing home care. That buys us that 5 year window. So you could be private pay for 5 years, and you could give away say you've got $2 million, you could give away $1.5 million and then go on private pay nursing home care for 5 years. And when you apply for Medicaid, they look back 5 years, they can't see the $1.5 million gift. They can, because they only look back for the five.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Very much. Yes, it does.
All right. Hey, have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thank you. Well, if I win the lotto, I'll pay for my own way.
It's, you know, when you start having a large number of assets, all bets are off in terms of what it is that you can do and what it is that you can't do. And as I said, one of the things that we do in planning for Medicaid is gifting. Looks like we got another call coming
in. Take that call. Good morning. Good morning. You're online with the attorney.
You know, this kind of irks me, all these rules and regulations. You know, it's my money. I can do what I please. I can give to who I want to. I don't know when I'm going to go to a nursing home or get sick or whatever.
I agree
and
with you completely.
That's a lot of baloney. I'll do what I want with it. And if I want to give it to my children, some of it, I'm going to give it to them and let them worry about it.
Yeah, and you are perfectly welcome to do that. The only caveat to that, the only thing you need to add to that is, If you want the state to pay for your nursing home care,
I know I've been through this.
You got to play by their rules, and that's just what it is. And the other piece, and this is a little bit tongue in cheek, is I like all of those rules because it keeps me employed.
Nobody knows how long you're going to live or what you're going to do, where you're going to be 5 years from now. Who knows?
Exactly.
Nowadays we're all living to be 100 almost. So
yeah, and that's why they made it 5 years, because they want to make it hard. They do.
I think it's disgusting.
Okay.
Thank you.
And we have another call coming in.
Sure.
Good morning. You're on with the attorney.
It's my money and I want it now.
Well, how do you get it now?
That's the problem. And it is. It's a difficult question to say. You know, it's your money. You worked hard for it.
Yeah.
You saved. You did not live high on the hog. You didn't take a lot of vacations, and now you end up in the nursing home, and you're paying on your own, and the person in the bed next to you did not save their money,
right?
And they're getting the state to pay for it right away. Is that right? I'm not sure it necessarily is. But the silver lining in all of this is that we have a system that says we will make sure you are taken care of, but we want you to use your own money first, regardless of what amount of money it is that you have. And so these are difficult kind of ethical questions and moral questions, and what's right and what's wrong. And I could discuss that, you know, my opinions on that all day long. But really where I come in with a client is I say, here's what you're allowed to do based on what the rules are that are out there. And you do need to be careful in terms of what it is that you do. I've got a circumstance that I've dealt with recently where a parent did give a large gift to a child. Gave that gift to the child within the five-year period. Parent is now applying for Medicaid, and Medicaid is saying, we are not going to pay for your nursing home care until you get that gift back from that child. And the child came in to me and said, do I have to give it back? And I said, there isn't any rules that says that you have to give it back. You don't have to. The penalty is that Medicaid will not pay for your parents' nursing home care, and your parents don't have the money to pay for the nursing home care. So the nursing home care costs are going to have to be paid by someone else. And so it's from a legal perspective, no, you don't have to. I said, but there may be a moral or an ethical reason for you to give that money back. But lawyers don't necessarily have to be moral or ethical. We just have to be legal. And so that's where the difficulty comes in.
And we're out of time.
All right. Thank you
so much, Nathan.
Thank you. It's a pleasure as always. Okay.